This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Okay, get ready. For the rest of the year, you're likely to feel the pressure to be nice, especially to your family. It is the right sentiment, of course, but family members and friends can be difficult. And when you're forced into close confines and expected to be cheerful and to cherish one another at all times, it can set your teeth to grinding. Some of our listeners have been sharing awkward holiday moments on our Facebook pages. Amy says, "How about my dad repeating the same story every year and us having to pretend we're hearing it for the first time as he rolls on the floor laughing and pats himself on the back?" Elizabeth remembers going gluten-free, sugar-free, and vegan all at once right before Thanksgiving. She says, "I ate steamed Brussels sprouts with no butter. That's it." And Jessica shares that moment when your mother-in-law puts bananas in the stuffing when her own son is allergic. All right, your turn. Share your awkward holiday moments with us. You can find Vermont Edition on Facebook or go right to vpr.net, or you can call us. 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Anna Post and Daniel Post-Senning are authors and etiquette experts from the Emily Post Institute in Burlington, and they're here with me today to commiserate, but also to help us through some of the thornier etiquette questions at this time of the year. So listeners, if you have a question about how to avoid an awkward moment, you can give us a call with that as well. Emily and Daniel, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Jane.
Such a pleasure to be here.
All right. I want to know the truth because you are cousins as well as authors. Do you have just totally smooth sailing at all of your holiday parties and family gatherings, or do you have some awkward moments?
You know, at the risk of sounding completely obnoxious, since we were kids, always gotten together up at our grandparents' house when they were alive up in Stowe, and it was kind of the best day of the year. So
absolutely. If you had a Norman Rockwell image in mind, it was somewhat close to that.
We promised to commiserate on many other things, though.
I know, people must be so disappointed. They're like, really? The posts really are good at all of this stuff? That's just disappointing.
But if it makes you feel better, we ate on our laps in the living room and we ran around the house like little kids do.
And we weren't without our share of interpersonal family difficulty, but in many ways that's part of the pleasure of having a large family and people you can count on having long-term relationships with, and that's one of the treasures as well, believe it or not.
Well, Daniel, go into that a little bit because, I mean, that's the truth, isn't it? It's not like you're going to have a holiday party or family gatherings every year without having some little misunderstandings or somebody's kid screaming while the other kid's trying to take a nap. I mean, it doesn't have to be perfect.
It's something we talk about at the Institute all the time, that how you handle difficult situations says as much about you, your poise, and your good grace as how you handle the successes in life. So in many ways, it's those challenging moments that are the opportunities to shine and build relationships.
All right, let's go into some of the family dynamics, because that is something that around the holidays that people start to get really antsy about and also look forward to. I mean, even when you're looking forward to having, you know, great Uncle Bob, you still want to make sure that he's going to have a good time. And can he get up the stairs? Where do we put him in the house? All of those kinds of questions. So the key to a good family gathering, Anna, is there sort of one key, or does it really depend on all of the specifics of your party?
Well, I think in part it depends a lot on expectations. And manners in their own sense really are just social expectations. And we have really particular ones about the holidays, what we think that day will be like, what we expect other people to do. So twofold. One, if there's certain things you really want, like a pumpkin pie, speak up early so you're not disappointed on the day. And other than that, it's good to let certain things go just a little bit. You know, even though you know Dad will tell that story that he thinks is so funny one more time, just let him have his moment. It's one moment out of the whole year.
All right. And what about, you know, if you're having family stay at your house, family members in close quarters, what's the best way to deal with that? Because they're not regular house guests. They're your family. Do you still have to follow all the same rules?
One thing that comes up with family is always the length of stay, the whole proverbial 3 days. It's good to have both a start time and an end time when they call to make their plans. Give people a key so that they can come and go on their own if you lock your house. And I would also make sure that they are, you know, invited to the refrigerator when they need to be. And also, it is fair to ask, though, if people are maybe leaving their things all over the house, say, you know, Sarah, could you take these up to your room? Thanks. And just, you know, keep it easy.
Daniel, should you give up your bedroom for your parents if you're, say, a young adult and you're hosting your family for the first time at your house? Do you give up your bedroom for the rents?
Absolutely. A little bit of deference to the elders in a family is always a good idea. And as Anna's talking about, this is one of those special times each year. So you want to invest a little bit more. People are going to have heightened expectations around this day. So turning on that extra good behavior, making a little extra effort to accommodate others is so highly advisable. It's hard to overstate it.
I'd also give people a little bit of downtime. Don't schedule every waking moment together, because I don't think many families could survive that, quite frankly. So giving people some time, if they're from out of town, to explore on their own, or even just a little time to curl up with a good book.
And really, in thinking about time and how we manage our time together, we would be remiss if we didn't mention some of the technological challenges that face families these days. And if it matters to you as a host or a guest, setting expectations early about screen time, mobile devices, particularly around family gatherings and meals, can be a good idea. Maybe parents can talk ahead of time about what some of those standards might be that everyone can live with.
Speaking of screen time, what if, you know, Thanksgiving is coming, you're not a football fan, but your cousins are? What do you do? Do you turn on the football game?
We might have an example of that sitting in the studio with you.
Oh, good.
I'm not so much for the football personally, but
and I'm a huge fan.
It's the perfect opportunity to go and get a head start on my second piece of pie. But no, it's also nice to get to visit. There's usually somebody else who's not so interested, so it's a great chance, you know, to have a little chat with that person, or maybe get a little bit of a start on cleaning up. Frankly, there are also plenty of times where it's a very nice opportunity to take a nap.
Although the cleaning up thing, then you're worried about getting into those sort of gender stereotypes. The guys are going to watch football and the women are going to clean up. That's not always the best thing either.
No, not always the best thing. You know, these days, obviously, we all know that anybody can help with any part of this. Follow your host's lead. This is a nice thing to do if you're visiting, is to offer to help out. If they say no, take them at their word and relax. But it is good, men and women alike, to offer something at some point during the evening to help out the host.
We're talking today about holiday etiquette, and we're sharing on our Facebook pages and on the website some of our awkward family moments around the holidays. If you need to get something off your back, go over to Facebook. You can check out the Vermont Edition Facebook page or the VPR Facebook page. And if you have questions, maybe you want to get some questions answered before your friends and family arrive for the holidays, you can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. All right, I have a question for you. So in the next 3 weeks or so, I'll be having a new baby. What's the etiquette around sharing a new baby with the family? Do you let the family hold them? Do you tell them what your preferences are? Do you say to, you know, Uncle Bob, sorry, you have a cold, you cannot touch the baby?
Well, those are some choices you get to make as a mother. And I like the way Anna answered the last question from the perspective of the host or the guest role. And as the mother, you're in many ways playing a hosting role, introducing people to the new child and being clear about what your standards and expectations are so that your guests can meet them is a great way to make that whole interaction go as smoothly as possible. So different parents are going to choose different standards, but be clear with your guests about what your standards are. I really enjoy sharing the experience of a new baby. At the same time, it's also really good to stay close so you don't abandon anybody who might be uncomfortable. The child starts to scream or fuss.
So don't do the Black Friday shopping and leave the new baby with the family.
Well, since we talked about sharing, we should also talk about how you recover and retrieve the child as well.
Now, what about at the holidays when, you know, often they really are these family gatherings and they're really nice places to share traditions. And you often, as families, people have traditions and have the stories that everybody knows and have that shorthand. But then sometimes you invite, you know, one of the orphans in your friend group over for Thanksgiving or for another holiday party. How do you best make them feel welcome when it's you and your whole family and then this stranger to the rest of the family who you're trying to welcome in?
Sure. So have first off, if you're doing place cards, make sure that whoever's the host has their name to include them in the mix. That's just a good one up front. After that, when they arrive, make sure to introduce them around to everyone who is there. Even if you think that they might know them, this is a great way just in case they won't be feeling awkward. At the dinner table, do a mix of including them in some topics you know they can speak to. And if this is the thing that can get really tricky at the holidays, if the family starts getting delving too much into personal lore and legend that would wind up leaving that person out of the conversation, look for openings to either take a moment and explain what you're talking about to them. That can be a great way to include them, or to shift the conversation to topics that they can be part of as well. And if they do bring a dish, even if you weren't planning on including it in the menu, this is the one day that it is nice to make sure that makes it onto the table as well.
And for that orphan friend who's coming to dinner, what should they be aware of? I mean, they are coming into a family gathering. Any sort of tips for the new person? Or, you know, or maybe you're bringing your new partner for the first time and trying to introduce that person to your family.
Well, just like the host is going to play their roles, greet, introduce, check in, the guest is going to play their roles. They're going to RSVP as soon as they get the invitation, and they're going to talk to their host. So their host is going to know if they're bringing someone, what time they're arriving, what the expectations are around dress and attire. These are all the guest's obligations in the relationship, and ideally they're going to recognize that role and have those ironed out before they even show up. As the guest, you also want to think about having something in hand when you show up, and that could be something to share, a small house gift for your host or hostess.
You know, we were reading some of the emails and notes on Facebook that we'd gotten from people before the show about awkward holiday moments, and Elizabeth talks about going gluten-free, sugar-free, and vegan all at the same time right before Thanksgiving, and then all she could eat were Brussels sprouts. So it sort of feels like maybe there's an obligation on both sides here. If you're the host, you want to make sure that you're presenting dishes that all of your guests can eat, or at least some that they can eat. But as a guest, too, if you have allergies, if you have food aversions, how do you make those known without being rude? I mean, you don't want to say, and by the way, here are the four things I want you to cook for me.
Absolutely. You know, this is a question that comes up year round, not just at Thanksgiving. So it's a great one to talk about. And whatever a person's personal needs or choices might be, sometimes it's a choice, sometimes it's not an option. It is really important to respect that, not to question it or to give them a hard time about it, which, you know, even if you don't personally agree, this is not your choice. Now, when you're the one making the menu and you need to accommodate it, it is about finding a balance, making sure that there will be enough for that person to eat, but it doesn't mean they have to eat everything, that you need to give up your turkey just because this person perhaps doesn't eat meat, for example. But it might mean leaving the butter out of the mashed potatoes if they're vegan, things like this. These are compromises that are easy to make. By the way, I don't think this comes up often, but never, ever, ever try to fool somebody and say, sure, you can have that when there's chicken broth in it. That's not okay. And lastly, when you are the person who has some type of restriction, let the host know up front. That's not being picky. Oftentimes, they would accommodate you if they knew, and they'll feel even worse if they didn't have the opportunity. As mentioned, do bring offer to bring a dish as well to help take a little bit of that burden off. And if the host turns you down and says, no, I'll make sure you're covered, trust them and take them at their word.
But then if you're worried that your mother might put bananas in the stuffing and you're allergic to it, do you ask about every dish?
You know, I have to say that one is a little bit odd, and safety and health come first. So if you feel you need to double check, you go right ahead.
I love where Anna went with that answer. Safety does trump etiquette, and there are food allergies and there are food allergies. There are people who are allergic to cats, and there are people that are really allergic to cats, and you should always be careful about your health. At the same time, you don't want to push or impose your preferences on others, and being aware of where you draw those lines is an important part of being a good guest.
On the other hand, if you just don't really love sweet potatoes, should you still eat it?
So here's the thing. If there's a big buffet and you can kind of pick and choose, by all means, pass them right on by. There's going to be plenty to fill up your plate. If you've been served a plated meal from the kitchen instead, try to take what, when I was a little kid, and I think many families in Vermont probably teach their children the same thing, the no thank you helping, which is just try it, and then you can move on from there. But I would also say that you shouldn't eat anything that's going to make you sick. In most cases, we're talking about adults here, and they know what they can have and what they can't, and just make sure that there's enough for you to be able to partake in the meal, since that is a big part of the day.
Or you can do what my brother used to do. He would just claim he was allergic to various different foods, even though he wasn't. And he would say, the doctor told me. So that's one way to go about it. We are talking about holiday etiquette today. If you have questions about, for example, how do you tip? Who should you tip? Are you going to tip your hairdresser? What do you do with your mail carrier? And what's appropriate for your kids' teachers. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Or how about those office parties? You want to let loose, but you don't want to let too loose. So what's appropriate, and what do you do if you get a present and you're the boss? Do you have to reciprocate to all of your employees? All of these etiquette questions around the holidays can be answered. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211 or post on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Anna Post and Daniel Post-Senning, authors and etiquette experts from the Emily Post Institute in Burlington, are here today helping us navigate the murky waters of holiday etiquette and how to get through the next few months without wringing the necks of your parents, your kids, your partner, and anyone else you're supposed to cherish at this time of year. You can share your favorite stories of family awkwardness at the holidays or pose a question. Call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or share them on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. All right, I brought up tipping, and I think this is one area where people feel a lot of confusion and perhaps even some stress around the holidays. What's appropriate? What's not appropriate? Different employers have different guidelines, you know, different government regulations come into play here. So can you tick down just a little bit of a list, Daniel, of who do you tip and how do you tip?
Sure. Whenever I talk about tipping, I always like to start with the concept of a gratuity. Ultimately, this is about expressing gratitude. It's about thanking people who do important things for us. And whether it's someone who helps you with your personal grooming, or someone who does your hair, or whether it's someone who helps you with the access to your home. In New York City, it might be the doorman to your building. In Vermont, it might be someone who plows your driveway. Those are essential and fundamental relationships, and anything we can do to nurture them and grow them is really to all of our benefit. So annual tipping is a great time to really grow and nurture relationships with some of the people that are really important in our lives. The spirit of gratitude, that spirit of thanking someone, I think simplifies the whole idea of why am I doing this? What's the purpose? Is this expected? Is this obligatory?
But what about people who say, but I already pay this person. Why am I then giving them something extra?
Exactly. It's a gesture. And sometimes it's part of the social contract. When you're talking about eating out, we don't necessarily pay a living wage. Tipping is absolutely expected. It's part of the social contract. In other situations, it is a little something extra. But it's the fact that you're going that little extra step that means that makes it significant, that gives it some meaning. Just like we talked about on these special days, thinking a little ahead of time, making a little extra effort, these are special relationships. So making an effort to tip is making an effort to grow that relationship. And if you want to be the one that you walk through the door at your hairdresser and they fight over who gets to spend time with you and they take extra time and extra good care of you, you're maybe going to experience some benefit from that as well. So some good guidelines are to think about the people in your life who might deserve or warrant an annual gratuity, and the holiday season is a great time to give that gift. It might be a paper person who delivers a paper. It might be the, like I said, the person who's controlling access or helping you keep access to your home managed. People who help you with personal grooming, a personal trainer, a hairdresser, are also good people to keep in mind. Anna, are there other folks on the list that
Think about people that you don't necessarily see every day. So this could be your mail carrier. This could be your garbage man. This might also be someone who comes into your home, perhaps a nursing care for someone who's a little bit older, or maybe daycare. You probably are seeing them on a regular basis, but still, the people who help you out throughout your daily life. And think too about maybe people who help you out in the summer. Maybe you have a pool and someone comes to clean it in the summer. This is a nice way to say, thanks for all you do at the holidays. I think it's really nice to leave a card. Sometimes people worry, well, maybe I can't afford to be tipping a lot of these people. This is a real concern. I think it's a great idea to make a list of the people you would like to thank and then divide it up one of two ways. Set a budget and either give as you would like, going down your list till you run out, or divide up that amount equally. Either way, you can always give a card and say, thanks for all you do throughout the year. That's really my favorite phrase. Feel free to steal it if you like, because that's what this is about. Yes, they're paid to do it, but it's a chance to say thank you and show that appreciation that Dan was mentioning.
And if you're looking for an amount, if you are in a fortunate position, you can think about the cost of a single service, whether it's a weekly visit or a monthly visit. The cost of a single service is oftentimes a good reference amount to go with for an annual tip.
Mm-hmm. Now, we did mention letter carriers, and mm-hmm. there are some guidelines and rules around some tips and what different corporations or government entities will allow. Your mail carrier, for example, I think it's a $20 limit or something, right?
It's a $20 limit, and it's not cash or cash value, so no gift cards in this particular case. It needs to have real – this sounds sort of opposite of what you might want to be doing, but no real intrinsic value. So think maybe hand warmers, a little bag of chocolates, things like that work, but not totaling more than about $20 in value. One thing that happens sometimes at the holidays is people will leave little envelopes suggesting to give a tip. If you are not planning to tip, feel no obligation from that envelope whatsoever. If it's a convenient envelope for you to give a tip you wanted to give anyway, by all means, go ahead and use it. But there can be a little pressure there that I think gets uncomfortable for people. I'd also recommend, too, if you my father did this when I was a kid. He would spend one day out of the weekend in the holidays baking about 16 dozen chocolate chip cookies to give to everyone that they wanted to say thank you to. It's perfectly okay to do this in lieu of, say, a cash gift, for example, but I think it's a really nice idea, speaking of diet and allergies, to list what is in the ingredients for people.
We got a note from Carrie who says, I try very hard to eat only humanely raised meat. Is it rude to ask a host where the meat came from or how it was raised?
This one, actually, Dan, do you have a thought on this one?
This is really borderline territory. We oftentimes say in etiquette, two things will matter, both the perspective of the people involved and how you do something. And I think this is a case where the how can matter a lot. Knowing who your audience is and how you ask the question will keep you out of an episode of Portlandia and in reasonable territory.
So could you say, for example, when you're invited over for the holiday, oh, I eat only humanely raised meat. Why don't I bring the meat dish? And then even if the host or hostess says, oh, no, I'll do that. They know what your food preference is. Would that be an appropriate way to slip it in?
I might stop short of that since it's their meal and it's their choice. What I might do instead would ask curiously, and where did you get your turkey from this year? If you ask before the meal, then if you're not feeling comfortable about it, then maybe that's the part of the dish that you skip as you go through the line. And then if somebody asks, you can mention it, but there's no need to draw what could be seen as critical attention to it, since you are in someone else's home and it is their choice. And often it's a choice made not just for ethical reasons, which I understand myself, but also for budget reasons. And so you don't want to put them too much on the spot, especially if the choice has already been made.
All right. Good question from Carrie. Listeners, if you have another question, maybe don't quite know who to ask before the holidays, you can post your thought on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. All right. So many of us who work in offices or have coworkers have the joy and obligation of attending holiday parties, office holiday parties. And as I mentioned, it is a chance to let loose. It's supposed to be a time where you're able to be social with your coworkers. Maybe it's one where you're invited to bring a significant other and you get to meet all of your coworkers' significant others. It's supposed to be fun. But there are some guidelines about maybe don't, for example, drink too much.
That's a great first tip to keep in mind. We oftentimes conclude our business etiquette seminars when we teach corporate clients with a module that we call the 24/7 professional. And it's all about emphasizing that in a world that's getting smaller all the time, whether you live in a big city or a small town, the potential for actions outside work to affect you in the workplace are increasing all the time. And the office party is, of course, an example where that relationship's very immediate and apparent. But it's a great place to keep in mind that you are still an employee of a company. You are going to have to face these people the next day. If you are going to drink, applying a one-drink rule to yourself can be a great way to check your behavior in that situation. Apply some moderation, a little discretion to your behavior.
If you're the coworker, appropriate to post that photo on Facebook of your other coworker who maybe took it a little too far and didn't quite realize how much he was drinking?
You know, tempting as it might be, no. And here's the thing, because it's not just about you and that coworker. I mean, maybe your friends outside of work and, you know, you're feeling like, oh, they just think this was funny. It's not just about you anymore when it's a work party. It is also about your office, and it reflects on them as well as on the two of you. So not the time for that, I'm afraid. And hopefully we're not doing too much that's such photo worthy that could be getting us in trouble anyway.
Do you have an obligation to go to your holiday party? Is it part of the job in a sense?
The way you engage business social situations is going to potentially have positive impacts for you as a working professional. So it's advisable not to just retreat from all business social situations because there's potential danger. There's also real opportunity there to foster and grow relationships. It's an unfortunate reality in life that we spend oftentimes as much time with the people we work with as we get to spend with our families or our closest friends. And any opportunity to take that relationship, nurture it, grow it a little bit, in many ways, it's a great opportunity to do that.
Let's go to Sheila, who's calling in from Mount Holly. Hey, Sheila, go ahead.
Hi. Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question for you is, how do you handle when you get together as a family and people want to exchange gifts and you're not in a financial position to get gifts for everyone and yet you're on the receiving end? How do you gracefully bow out of that?
Thanks for the call, Sheila.
Thanks, Sheila. That's a great call, and it's something that we've gotten in various forms over the years, especially recent years, a lot with, you know, think of it as a changing tradition. There's two ways you can go about this. If it's a family gift exchange that you get together and do every year, and you know that you will need to change your buying habits a little bit this year, let people know in advance. You don't need to explain why if you don't want to. Although explaining why can let people know it's not personal. Most people can understand that budget is what it is, and it's not a choice. It's not a wish. So if it were me, I might simply say, I wanted to give you a heads up that I won't be able to do some of the gifts I usually like to do. I wish I could, but it just won't work this year. That way, people know in advance. Changing traditions right in the moment can be a little harder for people to absorb, especially if children are involved. So letting people know well in advance is helpful. If that's not the case and it's a surprise in the moment, just simply thank the person for the gift that they gave you. And if you weren't planning to give one in return, actually, etiquette has always said that you don't have to do that. It's when we're changing a tradition that I think it's nice to acknowledge it to people so that they understand and hopefully there aren't any hurt feelings there.
Is it okay to just give a card to somebody who's given you a gift?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What if your boss gives you a gift? Do you have to reciprocate?
No. And in fact, I would also add that you certainly can if you'd like to. You know, here in Vermont, we have a lot of small offices and we all know each other and we're friendly, but there can be that awkward feeling of not wanting to look like you're currying favor with the boss. So go in as a group, even if it's just two of you. Go in together on a gift and, you know, stick with things that are professional in nature. Obviously, nothing too personal like, you know, clothing or perfume, things like that. I hate to say it, but it has to be said sometimes.
No lingerie.
No.
Or even pajamas.
Right. No pajamas.
No. But going in as a group, you know, takes a little of that pressure off, but still lets you say, you know, hello at the holidays to somebody that you work with on a regular basis.
And that idea of keeping the gift professional is a great one, whether you're sending gifts up or down the food chain.
We got a note on gifts as well from Lorianne, who says, I have three siblings. We all have kids, and we usually get together along with my parents at some point during the holiday season. We decided many years ago that gifts are not necessary, and it really took the pressure off, especially for those who might be having a tough year. We've all gone towards making things to share, canned food and goodies or crafty things. It lets us focus more on just being together. Good point there, Lorianne. And let's go to Jason, calling in from Brattleboro. Hi, Jason.
Hi there. How are you today?
Good. You?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question in regards to the tipping. When it comes to massage therapy, I've never really gotten a consistent answer or a good guideline as far as how that works for massage therapy.
And Jason, are you getting massage therapy frequently, or is this a very occasional thing?
It's semi-frequently, once a month.
Okay. All right, Daniel, so what should Jason do?
I think you asked the question that I would have started with, which is it something that you do regularly or is it something that you do occasionally? And if it's something you do occasionally, you want to be sure to tip on each occasion. That's often the routine anyway. But if there's someone that you return to, thinking about an annual tip or a holiday gift is a great idea, something to keep in mind. So, yeah, that would be appropriate in this situation.
All right. And Gretchen says, I work in a small office in which I'm one of four health professionals. In the past, we've done group gifts to the support staff and office manager, about eight people from all of the professionals. Last year, for example, we gave the staff a monthly Harry and David gift of fruit. But since each professional has their team of one or two people who really support their practice, I feel inclined to give a more personal gift to my teammates. Any guidelines to avoid hurt feelings?
It's perfectly okay to go ahead and, you know, I think most people will understand that you have that slightly more personal relationship. I'd certainly, if you weren't giving cards, I would certainly add cards with a message of appreciation to your individual team. And a little something extra, perhaps, rather than a completely different gift, might be a great way to make that clear.
Now, if you celebrate one holiday, some of your friends don't, you're not quite sure, you maybe send out that family update with your holiday card. Is it appropriate to say Merry Christmas if you're sending it, for example, to Jewish friends?
This one is, it's a good idea to go with the happy holidays. And I get pushback every year about this. Well, I celebrate Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever it might be, and it's not a happy holiday, it's Merry Christmas. And it is for you. But when you are interacting with people whose religion you don't know or you don't share, I think happy holidays is a nice way to be inclusive as a two-way street, not just as the person receiving the card, but giving it as well. It avoids any sense of imposition, and really what you want to do is reach out. That's far more important.
I would jump on and say, oftentimes people think the heart of etiquette is the golden rule. Treat others as you would like them to treat you. Someone recently taught me the platinum rule. Maybe try treating others the way they would like you to treat them. And I really like this concept of taking the other person's perspective into account.
Probably a good thing to keep in mind in the holiday season anyway, to try to keep us all balanced. Anna Post and Daniel Post Senning are authors and etiquette experts from the Emily Post Institute in Burlington. Always a pleasure. Thank you for being here.
It's a treat to
Thank
be
you
here.
So much.
Tomorrow on the show, we're going to be hearing from the CEOs of the two insurance companies selling policies on the Vermont Health Exchange. Bob Kinzel will talk with them about the problems affecting the exchange. But coming up now, we are going to be treated to a live performance from Kelly Raven, a singer-songwriter from Bristol. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and I'm joined in the VPR Performance Studio now by Kelly Raven. He's the singer-songwriter who lives in Bristol and is well-known in the Vermont music scene as part of the hard-driving country band Waylon Speed. But he's just released his third solo album, and he's here today to play a few tracks from it and talk with us. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you hit us with a song before we chat?
Okay. Sounds good.
Bring her a glass of wine, anything to pass the time. Well, fascination's running thin, can't seem to get back there again. I hang left on Nashville Road when the riverbed is getting cold, and when I get to